The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your NPR station since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 13th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. The OK Mozart Music Festival continues this week in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Music already underway today continues through concerts tonight in Ambler Hall and Price Tower in Bartlesville. Among the highlights for tomorrow, Trio Solari tomorrow night at 7:30 in Ambler Hall. Folk music tomorrow night at Price Tower beginning at 7. And tomorrow morning, a Cherokee Avenue walking tour beginning at 9. The OK Mozart Music Festival will culminate Friday night with the Tulsa Symphony. There are all kinds of concerts and events. Many of them are free, and you can find more at okmozart.com. Ahead on today's Ozarks at Large, A and The. Three small words with six total letters. But articles make up a pretty big part of our daily language, and there are surprisingly several rules associated with those words. Well, maybe not surprisingly, if you've been paying attention to the Militant Grammarian. She's back in the second half hour to give us the lesson on articles. First, we start with the second part of our story about the public housing situation in Fayetteville. Today, we explore the concerns made about tearing down Willow Heights, which is located at the base of Mount Sequoia on Willow Street, and a proposal to move those residents to another Fayetteville housing authority called Morgan Manor, which is located just east of Walker Park. The Fayetteville Housing Authority has applied for low-income tax credits to receive funding to build additional apartments at Morgan Manor for those residents. Last night, the FHA went before the Fayetteville Planning Commission to get approval for that large-scale development. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek was there, and she has more about what led to the outcome of last night's meeting.
When a new project goes before the Fayetteville Planning Commission, the commissioner's task is to approve or deny it, or to suggest changes based on whether the project meets city, state, and federal guidelines. But that's not exactly what happened last night when the architect and engineer, working with the Fayetteville Housing Authority, asked the commissioners to approve a large-scale development at Morgan Manor. The Housing Authority wants to build apartments with 58 additional units to eventually move the residents who live in 40 units at Willow Heights, which they say is in major disrepair. So to begin with, here is Assistant City Attorney Blake Pennington, who was on hand at the meeting last night to answer any questions about what the commission legally can and cannot do.
Our city code sets forth six reasons large-scale development or preliminary plat can be denied.
One, the development plan is not submitted according to the requirements set by the city code. Two, the proposed development would violate city ordinance, state statute, or federal statute. Three, the developer refuses to dedicate street right-of-way, utility easements, or drainage easements required by city code. Four, the proposed development would create or compound a dangerous traffic condition. Five, city water or sewers are not readily available to the property. And six, the developer refused to comply with ordinance requirements or conditions of approval for on-site and off-site improvements. With that in mind, Planning Commission Vice Chairman Matt Hoffman opened the floor to public comment.
I would just encourage you to try to frame your comments in light of Mr. Pennington's statements so that they might be more useful for our discussion. Also, please try to be concise and one at a time. You're good.
Chandra Hinton lives at Willow Heights. She says she's been there for a little over a year.
From that time, I was told that Willow Heights would possibly, almost certainly not be remaining, and that this was a fait accompli.
That, by the way, means a done deal in French. For Hinton, one of the biggest concerns is easy accessibility to services.
It's not possible to overstate how much it's needed for people who are residents of Willow Heights. Even access to this location tonight, this is walkable from Willow Heights, so I could get here. Getting to grocery stores or the farmers market to access food, the city library, which is amazing and provides all manner of services in and of itself, the Razorback buses, and any number of things like the Yvonne Richardson Community Center.
Martha Cardwell, who lives near Willow Heights, also had concerns about the potential of selling Willow Heights to a private developer for $1.25 million. The contract between that developer and the Fayetteville Housing Authority is scheduled to close in October 2022.
Low-income families have been there for a long time. This beautiful plot of land is being purchased by a low-income or by a private developer taken from low-income families. And they're going to make so much money off of it, y'all. They're going to make so much money off of low-income families.
The Fayetteville Housing Authority is planning to use the money from the sale of Willow Heights to fund part of the development at Morgan Manor. Melissa Terry also spoke at the meeting. In many ways, she has led the conversation against the Fayetteville Housing Authority's proposal. She lives between Willow Heights and Morgan Manor and also works part-time at Washington Elementary, which is where children who live at both public housing developments go to school. Terry has two main concerns. She told the Planning Commission she feels the Housing Authority didn't do enough to involve residents at Willow Heights and Morgan Manor in the decision-making process. Terry and several others went door-to-door at Willow Heights to conduct anonymous surveys. They collected 14 responses. Of those, 10 replied they would rather see Willow Heights repaired. Another major concern Terry mentioned at the meeting is the further concentration of poverty in South Fayetteville if the Willow Heights residents are moved to Morgan Manor.
I think we have to look as a city on zip code discrimination issues and why affordable housing is only an 01, and to think about that as a larger public policy discussion. But to think about the concentration of poverty piece, and then to look at again, at our 2030 goals. And when I look at number one, I see appropriate infill and revitalization. I don't see tear down low-income housing. I feel like revitalization is a great number one goal and should be our highest priority.
Mike Emery, who is the chairman of the Board of Commissioners for the Fayetteville Housing Authority, which makes the ultimate decisions concerning FHA matters, defended the agency's plan.
We've gone through everything possible that we can. Willow Heights, because of, I'm not going to blame tenants, but because of lack of action on previous commissions, they are beyond what we can fiscally repair right now.
Emery says the units at Willow Heights suffer from several problems, like no central air conditioning, flooding damage as recently as May. The units also fall below Fair Housing Act guidelines that require all doorways to be 3 feet wide, so they can be accessible to people with disabilities. Emery says all those issues have been addressed in designs for the new apartments at Morgan Manor.
This is the best with what we had that we could do as a commission. It's not perfect. The whole commission will agree it's not perfect. We are at the mercy of HUD and budget cuts from Washington.
He also stressed the board had been debating these plans for 2 years, and the board members had done a lot of soul searching along the way.
I was in low income when I was growing up. So to be implied that the board members don't know what our tenants go through, I take personal offense to that because that's simply not the case.
Denise Smiley, the executive director of the Fayetteville Housing Authority, who carries out the decisions of the Board of Commissioners, also defended the board's plan at a public meeting with the architect and engineer that took place last Thursday at the Community Center building at Willow Heights. In this exchange, you'll hear Smiley, the architect of the new apartments at Morgan Manor, and a woman who attended the meeting.
They're reducing our capital funds, they're reducing our operating funds. What do you expect us to do? Let this building completely collapse? Because that's what's going to happen if we don't do something.
I'm sorry, why can't these be renovated? Why can't they be renovated to ADA?
It's impossible.
Financially, it's impossible.
Physically, it's impossible. No, it's just impossible to do.
The construction of new apartments at Morgan Manor is expected to cost about $6 million, much of which will come from the Low Income Tax Credit Program. The engineer on the Morgan Manor project estimated that tearing down Willow Heights and rebuilding it at the base of Mount Sequoia where it is now could cost as much as $20 million. At Thursday's meeting, Smiley also denied that the residents at Willow Heights were not notified about what was happening.
Can I say this letter was written by me on March 10th of 2017, and it was sent to all the Willow Heights residents telling them what we were proposing. And we had a meeting in this very building. We had one person to show up.
Smiley says prior to that, in 2013, they notified residents at all four FHA properties that the agency was seeking to go through the RAD conversion process. That stands for Rental Assistance Demonstration. RAD converts public housing to Section 8 housing, which opens up public-private partnership avenues to get capital for improvements. Smiley says in 2014, they informed the residents at Morgan Manor that the property had been approved for RAD conversion. They did the same last year when Willow Heights was given the go-ahead to go through the conversion as well. She says they also hold resident meetings at their Hillcrest Towers property every second Friday of every month, where they update residents about policy changes. Meanwhile, the FHA board meets every fourth Thursday of each month, where they discuss and vote on matters that impact the housing authority. Most of those meetings, Smiley noted, were not attended by anyone. Besides the letter that was sent to each resident of Willow Heights this past March, Smiley says the FHA also posted notices on all the doors at the complex. She told those in attendance Thursday the agency is just trying to do the best they can by their residents.
We're not trying to destroy them or hurt them. We're trying to better their lives.
Back at the Fayetteville Planning Commission meeting, Vice Chairman Matt Hoffman asked Assistant City Attorney Blake Pennington what would happen if the Planning Commission denied the Fayetteville Housing Authority's request to build apartments at Morgan Manor.
But if you deny it or the City Council denies it for any of the reasons not listed in the City Code, yes, there's a substantial risk of litigation.
A reoccurring concern among the commissioners was the concentration of poverty at Morgan Manor if more low-income residents were moved into that development. Commissioner Leslie Belden and several others cited the Pruitt-Igoe housing project in St. Louis. Pruitt-Igoe was completed in 1956. It consisted of 33 11-story buildings with 2,870 apartments. All of the buildings were demolished by 1976. The urban housing project is often cited as a social policy failure. Here's Commissioner Belden, who says she learned about Pruitt-Igoe when she was a graduate student.
We all had to take the vow that we would learn the warning signs of what can create an unsafe situation in the area of low-income housing.
For comparison, there are 52 units at Morgan Manor right now. The additional 58 units would create a housing development of 110 residences. Belden says she would move to approve the large-scale development if it were going to be used for a different purpose.
If these buildings were apartments for college students, or if they were a choice for low-income residents, I don't have any problems with the elevations as such, or the parking as such. I have a problem with creating an unsafe situation, which comes from taking people and displacing them in a neighborhood that they're not comfortable with, they're not familiar with.
Vice Chair Hoffman and Commissioners Zara Niederman, Thomas Brown, and Allison Quinlan also expressed reservations about approving the additional apartments. Here's Quinlan speaking to Mike Emery.
None of us were there during that two years. You did not have the benefit of all out of this passion and problem solving when this solution was being generated. And that can also be on myself. I'll take that on. The positive that might be coming out of some of this comment and trying to keep this proactive is that there is a lot of passion and creativity and we have a lot of sharp minds, and this is a problem that we can solve and we can lead the way on, and I think you have a lot of people behind you.
At the end of the hour and a half discussion, the architect, engineer, and the Fayetteville Housing Authority agreed to let the Planning Commission table the decision until their next meeting in 2 weeks, which the commissioners then voted to approve. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Denise Smiley with the Fayetteville Housing Authority says she met with the assistant city attorney to go over the decision that was made by the Planning Commission. She says the FHA will be present at their next meeting on June 26th. And if they are denied at that meeting, the FHA will appeal to the Fayetteville City Council. But Smiley says if any litigation is necessary after that, that decision will have to be voted on by the Housing Authority Board. If you want to find out more about the RAD conversion process that has led to this debate, you can listen to part one of our story, which we ran yesterday, and you can find that story at KUAF.com or at OzarksAtLarge.com. Thank you. Following the resignation of Mike Malone last year, Mike Harvey has been serving as the interim president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council. The nonprofit organization recently completed a nationwide search for a successor and announced its new leader this morning. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The new president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council is an Arkansas native with an impressive resume. Nelson Peacock is currently the Senior Vice President of Government Relations at the University of California Office of the President. Prior to that, Peacock was appointed by President Barack Obama to lead the Office of Legislative Affairs for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. He also served as Senior Counsel to Senator Joe Biden on the Judiciary Committee of the U.S. Senate. Next month, he'll become the third leader of the 27-year-old Northwest Arkansas Council.
I view this job as a public service job. Public service is what I've done ever since I got out of law school.
Peacock earned a bachelor's degree and Juris Doctorate from the University of Arkansas and a master's degree from the George Washington University School of Law. As he takes the helm at the Northwest Arkansas Council, Peacock says he hopes to hit the ground running. Some of his priorities include being more strategic about communication and government relations.
Government relations is not always just asking our government officials for resources or policy changes. It's about making sure that we provide them with what they need, whether it's data, whether it's testimonials, whether it's all types of things to have a good, cohesive relationship with our elected officials.
He also wants to help foster the innovation culture because he says it's an important asset for the region.
I see it out at University of California, how they use their public research university to help foster economic development. You know, you've all heard of Silicon Valley and UC Berkeley and Stanford, but all of the universities, from the biggest to the smallest, really are very purposeful and energetic about how they take and compete for federal research dollars, how they help turn that into economic activity in the local community.
Peacock, his wife Susan, and their two daughters will move to Northwest Arkansas in July when he will begin his tenure with the council. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And on the Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large, we're scheduled to hear more from the new president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, Nelson Peacock, as part of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. The Libertarian Party of Arkansas yesterday submitted over 15,000 signatures to the Secretary of State's office to try to qualify to be a new political party for the fourth consecutive election cycle. 10,000 signatures from registered voters need to be certified for 2018 ballot access. The gubernatorial candidate will then have to receive at least 3% of the total vote for the party to automatically stay on the ballot in the 2020 election cycle. The chair of the Arkansas Libertarian Party, Michael Packow, says libertarians deserve to be looked at as a competitive party.
Last year, the Libertarian Party was the only party to field candidates against incumbents in all four U.S. congressional seats. In state legislative races, Libertarians provided the only opposition in nearly a third of all contested races. Libertarians are giving the voters a choice in races up and down the ballot. Moreover, people are choosing to vote Libertarian. Across the four congressional districts last year, our candidates earned over 196,000 votes, about 18.5% of the total.
The Secretary of State's office has 30 days to verify the signatures. Packow says it's an unfair initial hurdle for third parties, but one he's confident will be surpassed yet again.
Unlike in other states where continued ballot access can be retained by achieving 2% of the vote in any statewide race, Arkansas requires 3% of the vote in one single race to determine political party status, either president or governor. We'd like to see that standard changed, but in the meantime, we will continue to put up candidates for office the only way we are able to, by turning in petitions to become a new political party once again.
The Democratic Party of Arkansas only fielded one congressional candidate in 2016, but this year a growing number of Democrats are expressing interest in 2018 races. Libertarians plan to hold a nominating convention in the spring. No Arkansas Libertarians hold legislative, statewide, or federal offices. And the 2018 elections are also on the mind of John Brummett. In about 4 minutes, he'll talk to Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics, about the 2018 congressional races. Oh, and also about that testimony on Capitol Hill last week.
People went into it watching with preconceived notions, and everybody was able to protect their preconceived notions, even if they, in their hearts, they might know better. I know how all this is going to turn out.
How is all this going to turn out?
The Russians... cyber meddled in our election in a horrible way. But we need to do something about that, but we probably lack the will to do it. Trump did not collude with the Russians. He's not really smart enough to collude. He's just kind of a goofy guy who liked their tweets and likes Putin.
John Brummett, just ahead on today's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Members of the Senate Intelligence Committee will question Attorney General Jeff Sessions today. Senators will ask him about his connections to Russia and about fired FBI Director James Comey. I'm Ari Shapiro. We'll bring you the latest and the rest of the day's news this afternoon on All Things Considered.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. Clouds are expected tonight, but the National Weather Service forecast includes no rain. Lows tonight from 70 to 74 throughout the KUAF area. Tomorrow, a few clouds and highs from 88 to 92. Then tomorrow night, more clouds, and there is a slight chance of rain, about a 20% chance, in northwest Arkansas tomorrow night. Throughout the region tomorrow, lows will be from 69 to 74. Brandon West of Mountain Man Healing will discuss traditional Ozark folk remedies Wednesday, June 21st at noon at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. Weston, whose family has lived in the Ozarks for generations, describes himself as a spiritual healer, herbalist, folklorist, and writer. Located at 118 West Johnson Avenue in downtown Springdale, shilohmuseum.org or 750-8165 for more information. The Idle Class magazine presents the 2017 Black Apple Art Awards, June 16th, that's Friday, from 5:30 to 10 p.m. on the deck at the Dixon in Fayetteville. This event includes music, art, fashion, and more. idleclassmag.com/blackapple2017 for tickets. The annual pancake breakfast for the Siloam Springs Lions is Saturday morning from 8 until noon at the First Methodist Church in Siloam Springs. This is the main fundraiser for the high school scholarship program in Siloam Springs. A big fundraiser for the Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas, Spark of Hope, is approaching, and the deadline for sending an RSVP is Friday. The event, to take place at the Fayetteville Town Center on the 22nd, will feature Barrett Baber as the featured speaker. Baber, an Arkansas native, was a finalist on the NBC program The Voice. He released his first full-length album, A Room Full of Fighters, last year. You can find out more about the Spark of Hope event and about the Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas at spsfnwa.org. And Parrot Island Water Park in Fort Smith. Parrot Island Water Park in Fort Smith will participate in the world's largest swim lesson on Thursday the 22nd. Around the world, tens of thousands of people will help deliver the message that swimming lessons save lives. In all, more than 20 countries and 600 locations in the United States will take part in this event on the 22nd. At Parrot Island, registration for children ages 3 to 17 begins at 8 that morning. The lessons last from 8:30 to 9:30. In the United States, drowning remains the leading cause of unintended injury-related death for children ages 1 to 4. You can learn more about the Fort Smith portion of the world's largest swim lesson event by calling Parrot Island Water Park at 788-6505. Politician Carl Christian Steinke remarked, "It is difficult to make predictions, especially about the future. Making political predictions in 2017 seems to be weighted with even more than the usual challenges." Last week, the former director of the FBI and the current president of the United States charged each other with knowingly not telling the truth. We are in seemingly uncharted waters here. Yesterday, John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics about what might come from the testimony from James Comey and the reaction from President Donald Trump. John Brummett says there are many wide-eyed elements involved with this ever-developing story, including Comey's admission he helped make his own notes for meetings with the president become public.
Well, the thing that I did the double take on is when Comey just casually mentioned, by the way, I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought I should leak my memo through this law professor friend at Columbia to the New York Times. He essentially said that big story that quoted my memo, I arranged for that myself because he wanted to protect himself against the false statements by Trump. He also thought that would facilitate the appointment of a special counsel, which it did. And of course, we also learned, even though some people said they knew it before, that Loretta Lynch, the Obama Attorney General, had told him not to call the investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails an investigation, but an email, and therefore he didn't
call it a matter.
A matter.
Yeah.
And he didn't trust her at all. So what we learned is that Comey appeared, in my view, to be fortifying his credibility in his charges against Trump by telling other things that were unfavorable to others and perhaps favorable to Trump. Of course, that didn't stop Trump and his people from taking the parts they liked and saying, aha.
Total vindication.
And ignoring or denying the other things.
Yeah. So Republicans forcefully defend Donald Trump. We saw several on the committee, including, I think, Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio.
You thought Tom Cotton was forcefully defending?
I thought he was
attacking the press, the
New York
Times. Well, he was,
but in a way to kind of undermine the credibility of the reports that have been coming out about negative things on Trump. I thought that that was a little bit of what he was trying to get at when he did that. But Marco Rubio forcefully defending Trump, too. Democrats, obviously, on the attack. Was it a draw in the grand scheme of things? Did the needle move one way or the other on this public opinion?
No. No, it was a draw, in that people went into it watching with preconceived notions, and everybody was able to protect their preconceived notions, even if they, in their hearts, they might know better. I know how all this is going to turn out.
How is all this going to turn out?
The Russians cyber meddled in our election in a horrible way, but we need to do something about that, but we probably lack the will to do it. Trump did not collude with the Russians. He's not really smart enough to collude. He's just kind of a goofy guy who liked their tweets and likes Putin. He did not criminally collude. He did, in fact, by taking Comey aside and asking him to back off Flynn and then eventually firing Comey, and then telling the Russians, hey, it'll be easier for us now that we've got her. That's a classic definition of obstruction of justice, but Mueller may call it that, or he may say, well, the intent is not quite that in his report. Either way, the House Republicans under Paul Ryan are all Trump apologists, are not going to impeach him. So that's where we are.
That's what's going to happen.
That's what's going to happen. So, I mean, I can save us a lot of time. That's what's going to happen.
Forget all the classified briefings and all of the investigation.
The big, big story. Well, there are two, that the president was so, and I don't think Trump knew he was obstructing justice. I think the defense that Trump doesn't understand anything about his job is a strong one and a powerful one. But that the Russians interfered and potentially affected the outcome, and that's enormous. The guy Clapper's down in Australia saying this is bigger than Watergate. It is. But I don't know, one, what we're going to do about it when we admit that it happened and talk about the extent to which it happened, or two, if Trump's base wants to. I think if you told Trump's base, do you like the Russians better or do you like American Democrats better, they might pick the Russians. So I just don't know what, if anything, will come of all this.
Let's turn our attention to some things happening in the state of Arkansas that I find pretty intriguing. Is we have had a number of Democratic congressional candidates, at least potential Democratic congressional candidates, coming out of the woodwork. Joshua Mahoney in the third was the first one kind of out of the gate. We've seen Paul Spencer in the second form an exploratory committee, and we've got Jim Huff over in the first, who's got some political legacy,
right?
And at least looks good on paper right there.
That's
why are
resume.
We seeing all this Democratic activity? It's a simple question that I know the answer to, but I want a little more insightful answer.
Well, since it's so simple, I hope I don't struggle with it. It's two things. The Trump's travails at present are a drag on the Republicans potentially for the midterm, drag on them generally. Their president is not getting anything accomplished. His approval ratings are in the mid-30s. That has a sort of an effect on the entire party and the prospects in a midterm. So the Democrats smell a little bit of blood, even in a place like Arkansas, where you wouldn't think that they would have a chance. But beyond that, I think the bigger reason and the bigger issue by the time we vote because this Trump thing is going to be settled and he'll either emerge unscathed or be gone. And I think he will emerge unscathed. The bigger issue is health care reform. I do not believe the Senate is going to be able to come up with a solution. I don't believe they're going to pass a repeal and replace bill. Yeah. I believe what they're going to end up doing, and I'm big on predicting the future right now, they're going to claim victory by saying we're going to pass some legislation to authorize further waivers so that Health and Human Services Secretary Price can let states do what they want to with their Medicaid and with their exchanges. And they're going to say that's a victory. The Republican base will not be inspired by that. They will. That will not be a repeal in place. The Democratic base will be inspired by that because in some states, the mean ones, like Arkansas, could kick a lot of people off Medicaid right. And could take people with pre-existing conditions and put them into an ancillary pool that's insufficient to give them the coverage that they need. So all the emotion and would be on the Democratic side on that issue. Would that be enough for Paul Spencer to defeat French Hill in the second district? I don't know. And in the first district, you've got this fellow, what's his name?
Jim Huff.
Got an excellent resume. And Josh Mahoney in the Northwest, where things are changing up there. That invisible movement is strong up there. The Democratic Party is strengthening up there. But it is the reason that you're seeing Democrats. You know, Democrats didn't run. They only ran one in the four, and not particularly seriously. This, it's more because of the people and their need for health care than the person Trump, I think. I think this
The stars have to align, I guess, for
they
Democrats.
Do. The stars
because
have to align.
The numbers are still in the Republican favor, and we have seen Arkansans vote against their interest in electing some folks that advocate a certain platform versus another party candidate that advocates a different platform.
The best prospect would appear to be in the second district because of Pulaski County. We always say that, and then Saleen and Faulkner and White come in and obliterate the Democratic margin in Pulaski County. But a guy like Paul Spencer, who has a history of activism on like a cause, he's a big anti-Citizens United, pro-ethics in government, to get big money. A Democrat with a message and a persona of reform who refreshes people, that's what Vic Snyder did when he won that district. So it is possible that that kind of candidate could actually do pretty well. But still, I am not remotely predicting any change in our congressional seating.
But it's nice to see the spark of life, though.
Well, there's a spark of life and competition. Even for the simple purpose of loyal opposition. And even if, let's say, the Democrats run against French Hill in the second and don't quite beat him, it's conceivable they could scare him enough that his allegiance to some of the things that are happening might change a little. So that's how the process works. But yeah, we're going to have a more interesting 2018 election on the congressional level than we have had in a while.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and you can also read his columns at arkansasonline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics yesterday. You can find a weekday podcast devoted to the state's news at talkbusiness.net.
On the next Fresh Air, Behind the Lines of Jihad. Suad McHennett was raised as a Muslim in Germany. Now she's a national security correspondent for The Washington Post. She'll talk about meeting with senior commanders of ISIS and the Taliban, being thrown into an Egyptian prison, and talking with young Muslims drawn to extremist groups. Her new book is I Was Told to Come Alone. Join us.
Fresh Air twice every weekday on 91.3 at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Chaffee Crossing Clinic is ready for business. Yesterday, Mercy Clinic Fort Smith officially presented the new primary care clinic at Chaffee Crossing to the public. The clinic will also serve as a clinical teaching site for students from the Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine. Mercy Clinic Fort Smith and the Arkansas Colleges of Health Education combined to build the clinic that includes more than 13,000 square feet of space. The building cost nearly $8 million to construct. Bentonville-based Walmart is now featuring new signs promoting an Arkansas-grown program. The marketing strategy announced yesterday is part of the retailer's commitment to purchase an additional $250 billion of products assembled, made, or grown in the United States. Michael Hensley, a tomato farmer from Bradley County, Arkansas, says his farm's 15-year relationship with Walmart is giving him peace of mind. The retail giant hopes making it easier for customers to identify and purchase Arkansas products will directly lead to more jobs in the state. Talk Business and Politics is reporting a California-based Western wear retailer is purchasing part of Fayetteville-based Country Outfitters assets. The publication places a $1.8 million price tag on the sale involving the Northwest Arkansas e-commerce retailer. The California firm, Boot Barn Holdings Incorporated, has more than 200 stores in 31 states. Talk Business reports the sale involves certain assets of Country Outfitters. Arkansas Senators Tom Cotton and John Bozeman say they're pleased the 13-year ban on U.S. beef imports to China is ending. Senator Bozeman says the end of the ban is good news for cattle producers in Arkansas after the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced yesterday it had reached a final agreement with Chinese officials to end the ban. And the deadline to apply for an Arkansas Lottery scholarship is being extended to Thursday. Applicants can be new high school graduates, students already enrolled in schools, and older students wanting to continue education. Lottery officials say since 2009, the program has provided nearly $700 million for more than 230,000 scholarships for students attending 51 colleges, universities, and technical schools throughout Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. Welcome back.
Hey, Kyle. You know, I'm sure many teachers experience what I did through my years of teaching, being surprised at what is no longer basic education. One thing that I found out was that students no longer have a good grasp of articles.
Like the, an, a?
Right. Basically, an article is an adjective.
It
modifies a noun. English has two articles. I think of it as three, but they always put A and an together. But there is a definite and an indefinite article. And so the indefinites are A and an.
Right.
But I agree with you. It's three. But anyway.
But two, yes. Okay. Yeah.
The, which is called the definite article, is used to refer to specific or particular nouns.
Sure.
The boy I married.
The king of England.
Not just any guy.
Right.
Yeah, right.
The king of England.
Right, right. A or and is used to modify non-specific or non-particular nouns. They're called indefinite articles.
I'd like to eat an apple.
Yes. So what's the difference between these two commands? Pick up the banana or pick up a banana?
Pick up the banana, I'm referring to the one that's on the floor. Pick up a banana, hey, when you swing by the farmer's market.
Exactly.
Well, not that the farmer's markets here have bananas, but you know what I mean.
If you live in Florida. Maybe.
Sure.
One of the problems I found that students had was not knowing when to use A and when to use an, which just breaks my heart.
What?
That's one of the slam dunks.
I don't believe this.
You would be amazed.
Okay.
You would be even good writers.
Now I hope we're going to talk about the when it kind there is
yeah,
some
yeah,
fuzzy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
All right. Okay.
You know
all
I'm
right,
good.
Okay.
I'm right. Always pick up the fuzzy stuff.
Okay.
Right. So, all right. So when to use A and when to use an?
A before a consonant,
mm-hmm.
and before a vowel
mm-hmm.
or vowel sound.
Right, exactly. So it depends on the sound that begins the next word. Use A with a singular noun beginning with a consonant, a boy, a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Use an with a singular noun beginning with a vowel, an elephant, an egg. But then things get complicated.
Mm-hmm.
May I introduce you to the letters Y and H?
Y, the sometimes vowel.
Yeah, right. We always remember the recitation of vowels A, E, I, O, U, and sometimes Y. Okay, but sometimes the letter Y is a consonant.
Right. I have the feeling that maybe in the near future the Arkansas legislature will take this on and say yeah, either it's always or never.
Yes. Right, yes. Here's a rule for telling the two apart. The letter Y is a consonant when it's the first letter of a syllable that has more than one letter.
Yellow.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, mm-hmm. Yam, yogurt.
Right.
If Y is anywhere else in the syllable, it's a vowel.
Yes, yes.
Often the only vowel in the word, which helps us recognize it as a vowel because all English words require at least one vowel.
By, like, B-Y-E.
Yeah, gym, or sure. My, or cycle, or sky, or...
Mm-hmm. Or you want another one?
What's your name?
Oh, Kyle. Yes. Yes! By God, it is a vowel in my
it
name.
Is.
Yes.
There is, yes. For sure. I finally figured out why people have such a hard time with my last name. It only has one vowel. It has seven letters and only one vowel.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, it's weird. Pardon that diversion, but it sets up the rule about articles. Use a with a singular noun beginning with a consonant sound. Mm-hmm. A user. So what does user begin with?
A U.
And it is?
A vowel.
Well, yeah, but we're using a.
Because it's you that you're
sounds
hearing.
Like Y-O-O.
Right.
And sometimes Y can be a consonant.
Right. Now, if it was umlaut that you were using.
And umlaut, yes.
Because that's starting with the oo sound. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely.
That's, yes.
Yeah.
So it's the sound.
It is, absolutely. And so you can't look at the word itself. You have
right.
to sound it out.
Right.
A university, a unicycle. The same rule applies.
Wait. Uh-huh.
A university.
A-U-B. Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. A unicycle.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They're both Y-O-O sounds, right?
Right. Yeah. So if I was talking about an executive at a certain huge company, a Unilever executive vice president. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
The same rule applies for H's.
Mm-hmm. This is where people really get hung up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the H is hard, as in horse. You use a healthy baby is a happy baby.
A historic monument.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Okay, okay.
If it's silent, as an hour, use an.
An hour.
An heir to an herb fortune.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, Kyle, you're the go-to guy around here for emceeing important events.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever say that something is an historical occasion?
So that would be a historic.
A historic.
Yes.
A lot of people say and they're wrong.
Yeah, you see it all, well, not all the time, but I stop and question, but it's a.
Yeah. I think history and historical and all that seems to throw people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they want to put an before that.
What if I didn't win first, second, or third place, but I was still noted?
Because it's
an
not hard.
Honorable mention.
It's not hard.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. So, the rules also apply when you use acronyms.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to consider the sound, again, it's all about sound,
okay.
of the letter versus the word it represents.
Okay.
So, it would be a national contest, but an NCAA official.
Because N begins with the E sound.
Uh-huh.
NCAA.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Right. That's right. Here's something that you probably do naturally but never thought of. If the noun is modified by an adjective, the choice between A and an depends on the initial sound of the adjective that immediately follows the article, not the noun. So a broken egg, not an broken egg.
Yes. An egg, but you throw the broken in there, it's
right.
a broken egg.
So whatever word the article comes before, that's what determines it.
Mm-hmm.
What about European country?
So that is... A European country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again, that Y-O-O
right.
sound. Yeah.
Right.
Our definite article has gotten short shrift here. So I'll end with a few rules about the geographical use of the.
Oh, good.
And some people say the. I mean, when I'm in a sentence, mm-hmm. I'll say the. But when I talk about the word, I always say the.
I had a person who worked for me once who had me for about a day convinced, because she was utterly convinced, that there were certain words... that you said you pronounce it the before and certain words that you pronounce it the before.
It wouldn't surprise me. I'll look that up. It wouldn't surprise
me. Let's do that later. Okay.
Okay. So these are the rules about geographical use of the specifically the exceptions to not using the word the.
Okay.
Do not use the before names of most countries. You wouldn't say the Italy or the Mexico, but you would say the Netherlands.
Yes.
The Dominican Republic, the Philippines, and the United States, right?
Right.
Names of lakes and bays. Lake Titicaca, great name.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Erie, except with the group of lakes like the
Great Lakes. Okay, yeah. Sure.
Names of mountains, Mount Everest, Mount Fuji, except with ranges of mountains like the Andes or the Rockies, or unusual names like the Matterhorn.
Right, right.
I don't know why we have to use the before that.
Well, we maybe, do, don't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Names of islands, Easter Island, Maui, Key West.
But again, the groups, mm-hmm. the Antilles.
Except with chains. Like the Aleutians, the Hebrides, and the Canary Islands.
Mm-hmm.
Do use the before. Names of rivers, oceans, and seas.
The Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The White River.
Mm-hmm. Right. Points on the globe.
The Southern Hemisphere. The
Equator.
Right.
North Pole. The North Pole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. You wouldn't say, I want to go to North Pole.
No.
Right.
Yeah, right.
See, it reminds me kind of the one thing that always strikes my ear weirdly is the British usage of, he's gone to hospital.
Right, right.
Leaving the, mm-hmm. out of that. Geographical areas like the Middle East, the West.
Right.
And deserts, forests, gulfs, and peninsulas.
The Gulf of Mexico, the Sahara.
Mm-hmm. The Black Forest and the Iberian Peninsula.
What about these? What about the Hague? What's up with the Hague?
I don't know. I mean, okay. To me, it's like the Matterhorn. I mean,
what, it just is.
Who decided that it was going to be that?
Well, you know, there were discussions about Ukraine.
Yeah.
Last year, and you know, because some people call it the Ukraine,
uh-huh.
but I guess the proper use is just Ukraine.
Huh. Proper by whose call?
By Ukrainians.
Probably Arkansas passed a
right,
law about
right,
it.
Right.
I dare say, Kyle, you never knew there was such a big collection of rules about such little words.
But it doesn't surprise me now. our militant grammarian, the militant grammarian, is Catherine Sherrills. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, for most Arkansans, the process to renew a driver's license takes place every 4 years. But for some immigrants of Marshallese descent, the process has now become an annual ritual.
Part of the process that you go through is that all that information is submitted to the Department of Homeland Security, who looks at your status if you're not a legal citizen, if you're not a citizen of the United States. It looks at your status through the information that is, contained or held by the Department of Homeland Security.
Why driver's license renewals are different for some people and why a state legislator is looking into the matter on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. That's at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. Also available as a podcast through free services like iTunes and Stitcher. You can also listen to past editions of Ozarks at Large through the KUAF app on many smartphones and tablets. Opera in the Ozarks presents its 67th season, June 23rd through July 21st, at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs. This season features 22 performances of three fully staged operas, Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro, Bizet's Carmen, and Carlisle Floyd's Susanna. Sunday performances will be held at Arend Art Center in Bentonville. Tickets and schedule at opera.org. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball team continues its season at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Tickets, game times, promotion calendar, and statistics available online at nwanaturals.com. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring technology and telecoms, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com.
I'm Robin Young. The first commercial facility that can extract carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and then reuse it to cut new emissions has opened in Switzerland. But some scientists see it as an innovative first step to combating the impacts of climate change, while critics say the technology uses too much energy to run and is too expensive. That's next time, here and now.
In just a moment at 1 o'clock on 91.3. This is 91.3, a service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF 91.3, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mansfield. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Appreciate you spending part of your day with us. We will end with music from Count Tutu, an incredible, high-energy, fantastically talented band that will be at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street Friday night. You can learn more about the band at counttutu.com. This is a song they recorded for us inside Furman Garner Performance Studio a couple years back called Johnny's Machine Gun Parade, Count Tutu. Friday night at George's Majestic Lounge. Thanks so much for listening. Another brand new show tomorrow at noon and 7. Thank you.